Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Jumping into the playbook for a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio, I'm John Rook. PFW's Eric Scalavino is here as well. It's a busy show today. We'll be breaking down the Jets a bit, looking at some of the news that are making the headlines for the Patriots, in and around the Patriots here in the opening hour of the program. Hour number two today, we will be joined by the guru himself, Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com, Bleacher Report, Yahoo Sports, all of the above. He'll be joining us. And then Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News, who covers the Jets beat. He will be joining us to get inside the Jets as well in hour two. So in hour one, what we need is, because I know this is Wednesday, and yet this is a Thursday by normal game week, because the game is actually tomorrow.
It's actually a Saturday. It
could be a Saturday, actually, really, yeah.
For radio purposes, think about it, it's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
For football purposes, it's a Saturday.
It is a Saturday. But for radio purposes, it's Thursday. Mm. So that means it's prediction Thursday on a Wednesday, which means you'd better, if you want to pick, you got to pick now. So I'm going to ask anyone and everyone within earshot right now, now's the time to send in your prediction. You can do it one of several ways. The email address, webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number is toll-free. It's 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. Or you can call the regular number at 508-298-0398. Rings through, same spot, we'll get them all. Social media, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E on Facebook. The Twitter address is @JRBroadcaster, @JRBroadcaster, all one word. Ready, set, go. First person that gets the correct score, predict the score, first person that gets the correct score of Thursday night's game, wins a yearbook / media guide. We did this all last year, nobody won.
That's
last week,
incredible.
Nobody won. Nobody picked the right score. Now, I'm guessing, mostly Eric, that fans will probably hedge their bets a little more based on last week's results. What do you think?
Probably, which is why I think the opposite is going to happen.
Yeah, I heard you say that during the prediction part of PFW, and I have to tell you I disagree, and we'll get to that over the course of the hour.
Okay.
But I understand your reasoning behind it. I'm just not sure that I believe that reasoning is going to come to fruition.
Okay.
Explain a little bit more, if you would, please. Explain, well, Lucy.
You know, in the NFL, a lot of times,
and anybody that just got that reference, you're too damn old.
Desi Arnaz.
Very good. Yeah. Lucille Ball, right? Okay.
Right. So, yeah, I'm too old then, I guess.
I didn't go there. I didn't touch that. I let you handle that. All right, so explain.
Oftentimes in the NFL, when what everyone expects to happen doesn't happen. Like last week, everyone said, "Oh, yeah, Patriots going to go to Buffalo, roll over them. It's going to be
a blowout." Happen. Okay,
it didn't happen.
I'll buy that. Yeah.
So I think everyone now is scared because of that. I mean, not the odds makers in Vegas, but the fans that we've heard from are a little more, you know, skittish now as a result, and they're all worried that this is going to be a close game and it's going to be tough and where are we going to get the offense from? A perfect example, like in when was it? 03, 04, when Patriots were debilitated in the secondary on defense with injuries. They went to St. Louis. They had nobody in the secondary. Troy Brown had to play. How are we ever going to stop the greatest show on turf in St. Louis? And blah, 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 and they blew out the Rams in the dome. That kind of thing I could see happening tonight. Everyone's going to panic, freak out. Oh, what's going to go on with the offense? And the Patriots will put something together and win comfortably.
Okay. I'll tell you right off the bat that I think it's going to be a relatively close game. I hate the number. I think the Jets will cover, and the Patriots will struggle to cover that number. It's an extraordinarily high number. I do understand why they've been given it. I just don't think that they will be there. By and large, based on the struggles we saw offensively, knowing that there are going to be some injuries involved here that could keep some key members of the receiving core out of the lineup, Danny Amendola. So, you know, Rob Gronkowski. I just believe that it's going to be a struggle. I think the team that plays gets the A grade on D is the team that's going to win. And that also gives the Jets very much a chance because I think the Jets played better defensively last week against Tampa Bay than some thought they would. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I saw that impressed me a little last week about the Jets, and I didn't watch the entire game. I'll be the first to tell you that. I did watch a lot of the highlights, saw some clips, read some of the recaps, looked at the statistics, and I gathered that the Jets are a little faster, a little quicker, made trouble a little bit more prevalent for Tampa on offense. And I'll give some credit, at least to the newcomers on that side of the ball for New York, thinking that that also may be an opportunity for them to perhaps load the box against the Patriots somewhat, or at least show some of those looks and make Brady have to hit the green receivers. Now, I think there's no question that Tom can throw the ball. I think there's a question as to whether or not those green receivers will be where they need to be, which is the big problem that the Patriots, I think, had last week against Buffalo. And so until you see that happen, I think the Jets play the Patriots in that favor. Hence, I think the Patriots are going to struggle again to score. I think that field position and turnovers are going to be huge again. I think that if the Patriots end up in the minus column on the giveaway takeaway like they did last week against Buffalo, that the Jets are capable of beating them. The biggest difference here is that the Patriots are at home, which I do think will be a factor.
Sure.
And I do like the Patriots' chances of coming on the short week better than I like the Jets' chances of coming off the short week as well.
Yeah.
Because they got to go on the road on the short week. However,
shorter road trip than normal.
Shorter road trip than normal. Yes, that's a good point. Number one. Number two, you can never underestimate confidence. And I think the Jets are playing, you know, first of all, keep in mind, there are some of these polls, if you will. I don't know how much credit you put into the polls, but these power rankings that you see, you know, ESPN and Fox and CBS and all these, you know, major, you know, publications out there, especially, you know, on the web, do these power rankings, ranking the NFL teams from 1 to 32. It's because we all like rankings in life. Everybody's got to be ranked somewhere. I'm the number 6,738th ranked broadcaster in the NFL. So there you go. You're number, what, seven? NFL ranked writer? Is that it?
I hadn't heard that, but.
What? There's six better than me?
I did rank all the NFL road trips, though, very
recently. You did. Yes, you did.
We will talk about that when we have time.
I do want to talk about that. Okay, I'm being facetious. Point is that the Jets were ranked at the bottom of the league by several people all over the country, that this was the worst team. How can anybody be worse than the Raiders? But, I mean, it's just they were ranked.
Jaguars.
Or the Jaguars, too, for them. But the Jets were worse. And they won. So I know that they had to have used that as incentive last week. I know that had to go right up the wazoo of Rex Ryan, and I'm sure he pushed it up the wazoo of all the players in that locker room. And it, for whatever reason, they won the game last week and won a game they might not have won otherwise. Because I think Tampa's very capable, and I think we saw that through a week of practice.
It was a dumb penalty that lost that game.
Dumb. The Jets got out-jetsed is the best way I think that anybody can really put it. And it was the Bucks that out-jetsed them. But they won the game. So, fact of the matter is, they're feeling confident. They got nothing to lose. This is a game they're supposed to lose. They're not supposed to be any good. Everybody hates us. Nobody loves us. And if the Patriots, you know, jerk around here and let the Jets play with them, the Jets are capable.
Here's what I've got to counter that. I don't really believe in Geno Smith. And I think he's feeling a little overconfident after last week.
Yep.
I saw him, you know, beating his chest and doing all that nonsense after they got the gift at the end there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to I liked what I saw out of the defense last week. I think that will continue this week against another rookie quarterback. And I think they'll finally get more pressure than they did this past week against Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And they'll expose that Jets offense. The Jets won't be able to do much on offense, I don't think.
Okay. All right. And you said what was the score?
28-10.
You say 28-10.
Yeah.
All right, I'll hold my score prediction for just a little while, but I've already told you I do think that the Jets will cover the spread. I haven't said yet who's going to win the game, but I did say
the Jets are
going to cover the spread.
This is called a tease in the business.
Somewhat. 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free number. Here's our good friend Steve in Killeen, Texas. Steve, welcome once again into the playbook.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. First of all, welcome back. The Texas State Fair is starting, brother, so corny dogs maybe in your future?
Oh, you know, we do need to mention something because I know we did this on the air at the end of last year, but the briskets that you sent were outstanding.
Well, that can happen again, John. I've been shaking and baking since January 9th, fighting a little battle with cancer, but that's no big deal. I'm doing well.
Tell us about that. I mean, honestly, you can divulge whatever you like, but I hope you're doing better.
Yeah, you know, all the things that you would normally expect that somebody going through this would go through, I haven't had to deal with. And, you know, right now I'm on track, hopefully. You know, as the Patriots are heading into the playoffs, I'll be getting ready to buy a motorcycle for next year to celebrate just kicking this thing's butt.
There you go. There you go. Now, that's an attitude right there. I like that, and I admire that, and Godspeed, my man.
I appreciate it. Here's the thing that, you know, the parallel that I didn't get to mention on the earlier show to Eric, and again, kudos, Eric. But
thank you, sir.
The 03-04 season, where we're looking at the secondary and just all the madness and having Troy Brown playing everything but handing out hot dogs. This year we're dealing with it on the offensive side of the ball, and I think the same thing is going to happen. We're going to end up with kind of a progression as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm.
The maturation is going to happen, and everybody's going to go, wow, these guys are actually really still kind of good. But, you know, it's just kind of getting over some growing pains, and I think we're going to get there. The first game of the season, I think, was a bit of an anomaly, in all honesty. You know, Tom not getting the handle on a snap.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things that, you know, normally doesn't happen. Ridley, I think, will be okay after, you know, putting the ball on the field just based on the fact that that's one of those things that Belichick will definitely get squared away. And, you know, I think it's going to be a close game with the Jets at home. I think they're going to probably put up maybe 21, and we'll get 28-35. And that'll be the way it goes. But
well, I have a question for you, Steve.
Sure.
Where does your confidence in Belichick helping Ridley come from? Because, you know, the whispers about Ridley's fumbling started at the end of his rookie year,
mm-hmm.
and then those whispers turned into a little bit of a light roar last year when he lost half of his four fumbles. And I thought this offseason he was supposed to have gotten over the fumbleitis and that it wasn't a problem. What makes you think now it's going to get straightened out?
I mean, even Kevin Falk struggled for a while too, but I think just with the pressure of where we are offensively, you know, Ridley realizes where he is. If he can't get a handle on the ball, I don't think we're going to see him for much longer, in all honesty.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah. I think it's a serious problem.
He's got to answer big time, I think, and it's going to start tomorrow night.
I just hope it doesn't get into his head so much.
That can ruin a guy's career.
Like a guy who's trying not to get hurt.
Right.
Inevitably gets hurt because you're doing things that you shouldn't normally be doing, and you're not playing the way you normally
should. We obviously see the talent that he has. He rushed for almost 1,300
sure.
yards last year.
Yeah.
He can
right.
be and is a number one back for somebody, but he may not be a number one back for the Patriots if he can't hold on to the ball.
I think the critical thing from that game that I saw was, and I don't want to call it a lack of effort, I want to call it a lack of awareness, the ball was on the ground for at least a second to 2 seconds, and there was no reaction from him to try and even get to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That part of it, I think, is kind of critical more than the fact that, you know, you put the ball on the field. It's part of the game. It's going to happen at some point in time. But I'd like to see some aggression in trying to, you know, keep control of the ball. I think would go a long way in helping him, you know, stay with the Flying Elvis.
Okay. All right. So give us a score prediction then for tomorrow night, because we got to put you in the running for the media guide.
I think it's going to be probably 35-21, John.
35-21.
I think that's going to come off the defense being able to step up a little bit more and just an unexpected special teams play.
So defense and or special teams might actually get on the scoreboard, you think?
I think so.
I agree with that. I think there's a chance.
Okay. All right. But the Jets scored 21. That's a pretty good amount for a Jets team that also struggled somewhat offensively last week.
Yeah, but I think part of it's going to be just, you know, silly things that will happen in the course of the game. They'll get a score that we won't expect. And, you know, just being fair to the talent that's there, you know, I think they could put up 14 points on us. And then, you know, something will happen off an anomaly, you mm-hmm. know, a tip pass that causes a Brady interception or something just bizarre that we don't see coming.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right, Steve, I'm glad that you called in. I'm glad that you're on the mend. Make sure you stay in touch with us, will you?
We'll do, and I'll get a hold of Kevin, and we'll see about getting some brisket up there soon, brother.
Or corny dogs. I mean, that's you know.
Good stuff. I'll do what I could do to make both happen, John. Right now,
no, I'm not gonna be greedy, Steve. That's one thing my mom taught me, to try to never be as greed. You know,
it's called being gracious. When somebody does it, you can just say thank you and we'll move on, John.
Okay, all right.
He has no problem being slothful, but greedy—that's another thing.
Well, but Steve understands this is serious. I mean, I'm from Texas, so this is serious.
I hear. All right, thanks, Steve. Good job, man.
Hope you got the Texas connection.
Got to have the Texas connections. I hope you get up there to the State Fair, by the way.
I will. That's going to happen, John. I'll catch up.
Good.
You guys take care. We'll see how things go after the Jets game.
Awesome.
All right.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Bye-bye.
You got it. Steve in Killeen, Texas.
State Fair coming up pretty soon, right?
Yeah. Actually, it starts...
like in a month?
I think the first week of October. Runs the first 2 weeks of October.
Like 3 weeks?
Because
maybe?
The Texas OU football game is in the
middle. In the middle of it, right?
Right in the middle of it. So after the first week, for the second week. So, yeah, a couple of weeks away. 2-3 weeks away, maybe. So that's good.
All right.
You know, I always wondered why. I mean, the state fairs up here? I mean, Rhode Island doesn't have
not
one.
We're not big into that up here.
I know that there's the thing out in Springfield.
Yeah, the Big E.
The Big E.
Yeah,
I think that's sort of considered a state fair of Massachusetts.
I guess so.
Isn't
it? Yeah.
Really?
I suppose.
I wonder why there hasn't been a state fair in Rhode Island.
I don't know. I think that's more of a southern thing, isn't it?
You think it is?
I think so.
All I know is it's a wonderful excuse to eat all things fried.
Ha.
You know, they fry things like Snickers candy bars.
Yeah.
And they fry things.
Why would you need
Snickers deep fry.
To be fried?
Let me finish.
Okay.
Deep fry Twinkies. Deep fry candy, ice cream. That's
how
given.
The hell does that work?
They've had deep fried beer.
What?
They've had deep fried butter.
Wait a minute.
They've had, what else have they done that's deep fried?
Deep fried butter?
Yeah.
You just eat the butter?
Yeah.
You eat a stick of butter that's been fried.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You've had one?
No. No. I'd look at that, and I would probably have a heart attack.
What on that list have you had?
I've had the deep-fried Snickers bar, which is delicious.
Yeah, I could have. Yeah.
I've had fried ice cream.
It doesn't ruin it?
No. Because they freeze the ice cream. They freeze the bar, you know, so all the elements inside are frozen. You dip it in the flour and such, and you give it a quick little into the, you know, and it's fine. And you put a little chicken fried coating on it is what you do, basically.
Right, yeah.
And it actually is quite delicious. I've had, let's see, what else have I had?
The ice cream?
Deep-fried. I've had the fried ice cream. That's a given. That's a staple.
Twinkie.
I've had this Twinkie. It's actually pretty good. It's a little chewier than I expected it. I expected it to like be just soft and gooey and melt in your mouth. It was a little chewier, and I think it's because of the sponge cake. But, you know, hey, at least we have Twinkies back to talk about
now.
Yeah,
that's
right?
True.
They
true.
Did sell the Hostess brand. They're back now. There are several things that
beer?
I'd love to try. I've not tried the
so what is
the,
that?
The fried
it's
beer.
It's a solid? It's a...
I don't have any idea how they do that. Maybe somebody can inform us and enlighten us and entertain us with that one. But there's a lot of different things that I'd love to try that I just haven't tried yet. So, you know, they've deep fried just about everything. Chinese food. Obviously, they do a chicken fried steak. You've had a chicken fried steak, right? Which is deep fried flat steak.
No.
Oh, it's delicious. That's a Texas staple. Chicken fried steak with mashed potatoes, gravy.
No.
Maybe a little green bean on the side. Or corn on the cob. It is unbelievable. It's just a flat steak that you flour and you bread and you put in a deep fryer, or in this case, since I don't have a deep fryer,
so it's like
home,
a cutlet.
Yeah,
basically.
I you know, fry it in a pan with about an inch of oil in it, and it's marvelous. It's an unbelievable way to have a steak, especially in the wintertime when you can't get outside and do the grilling around these parts. Right, chicken fried steak is magnificent. We may have to introduce you to the chicken fried steak.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's
it
worth
sounds
it.
Good.
It's definitely worth it. All right, now I need to go find a snack.
I know, I'm hungry now.
Take a break.
I really do.
We have a snack
I need
here.
One.
All right, let's see, what else do we have here? Don't forget, phone number again, 855-PATS-500, toll free, 855-PATS-500, or the regular line, 508-298-0398, to call in your predictions for tomorrow night. Webradio at patriots.com, the email address at JRBroadcaster, the Twitter handle, John.Rook on Facebook. Facebook today says, our buddy Big Matt says, if you get anything from the fair, it has to be that miserably hot sauce, and we taste it on the air again.
Oh,
remember we did that?
I remember when you did that.
Was that last year or 2 years ago?
Might have been the year before.
2 years ago?
Might have been.
Someone sent us that...
That gigantic... it might have been Steve,
was,
right?
Yeah, I think it was Steve.
From Killeen.
2 years ago. Yeah. I think it was Steve. And it was a huge plastic
jar.
It was a bucket. Yeah, I mean, it was one of those gallon jugs of hot sauce.
I like kill you hot
and
sauce.
And it was so hot... That
Kevin had some, right?
By the time we got... Yeah, by the time we got the jar delivered to us, the oil had risen to the top. You could see where the oil had separated from it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's trouble.
Yeah.
That's trouble. And because the oil... Oh, my goodness, you know, an oil-based thing like that, that's trouble. And it was strong even for someone who enjoys hot sauce like myself.
Yeah.
It was wicked. So that's a good recollection by you, Matt. He says, yeah, it was 2 years ago. I remember having one drop on a chip, and I nearly died.
That's what Kevin did, too. I think he his eyes started watering, and his throat got all
but
constricted.
You can't eat. Yeah, I know. You can't eat that stuff
that's
like you normally eat salsa.
Me. How do you do that? Why would you want to do that to yourself?
It depends on the mood.
Well, why would you want to do that to yourself?
Well, because actually, if you can get past the heat, the flavor is really good.
But, I don't know.
But you have
it doesn't
to be
seem worth it.
You have to be used to the heat. There's no question. No question.
I mean, I'm not a big spicy food guy anyway. Like we went to Buffalo this past weekend. Mm-hmm. We went to Duff's.
No good.
Yep. Second year in a row.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Well, I had my boneless wings.
Boneless.
My 10 order boneless. I don't like the bone.
Well, you got to learn how to shuck the wings just like you shuck corn.
But I don't like to shuck the wing. I like to just cut into the meat. I like the meat.
Okay.
It's
Yeah, but that's not really a wing. That's a chicken breast.
Yeah, I know. That's what I like better.
Oh, okay.
Well, but they still treat it. They still cook it the same way.
They cook it this well, it's the same flavoring, but I mean a chicken wing is a chicken wing.
I don't like the wing. I don't like the bones.
Fair enough.
All I care about is the meat. I'm a breast man, John.
Okay.
In many ways.
Okay.
And I had the mildest that you could get there. And that was still, to me, very spicy.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't have a palate for that.
When I go to places like Buffalo that are famous for whatever, I have to do as the hometown does. I go as
medium is hot, as they say on the shirts over there at Duff's.
Medium is hot.
Medium is hot.
Then I would probably go the medium, and then if it's not hot enough, then I would kick it up a notch, as our friend Emeril Lagasse might say. Mm. I would probably do that. That's just the way it is.
You're brave.
Well, I was weaned on it. What can I tell you?
Well, see, yeah, you've developed a taste for it over the years.
I remember my grandfather teaching me at a very young age that the really only condiment on the table that was worth having was Tabasco.
Ugh.
And I used to put Tabasco on everything. Forget salt. Forget pepper. It was Tabasco. Pepper sauce. On everything. Anything that was on our plate
chicken?
At Sunday dinner had Tabasco. Yes,
chicken and Tabasco.
Yep, chicken.
Fish?
Mm-hmm. Fish. We didn't eat a lot of fish, but it was on fish when we had it.
Pasta.
Oh, absolutely.
That's, really?
Absolutely. Pasta in the sauce. Oh yeah.
Oh my
absolutely.
God.
Totally. You know what it was?
Cereal.
Really, you know what? No, I wouldn't put it on cereal. Would put it on eggs though.
Well, I can see that.
Would put it on biscuits and gravy.
I've seen that.
Would put it on grits. Would put it on bacon and sausage.
Really? Literally
eggs.
Everything.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Geez.
Wouldn't do it on pancakes or waffles or anything like that.
Oh, thank God for that.
Oh, it's really good on corned beef hash, too. Really good on corned beef hash. Way better than salt. You're going to die anyway by eating corned beef hash anyway, so. Yeah. Probably doesn't make any difference. I say that to myself every time I go to the deli in New York. I'm like, I'm going to die anyway. Give me the corned beef hash. Michael says, how do they deep fry beer?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know.
It must be in a solid. It has to be in a solid.
Yeah, it has to be in a solid or a frozen form.
Right, frozen beer.
Yeah, frozen
like
thing.
Like a beer sickle.
Right. Yes, exactly. Like, well, probably they do it similarly like they do frozen ice cream. You know, they freeze it, they
freeze
super freeze it,
up, it
and then they dip it, they dunk it, and they dip it. Yeah, that's kind of it. And a lot of times, sometimes they call it fried, and it's not really fried. It's kind of like it's got the coating on it. Without actually stinking it into a deep fryer. But I understand a lot of the things, because we've digressed here, which we're very good at, by the way, into a talk about the state fairs. And
really got
just
here.
About everything there is actually deep fried.
Wow. That would be a good experience, I think, to go to a state fair.
Yeah.
Because I've never been to one.
I would agree. Michael also says, John, can you cover some of the injuries around the league, including the Jets? There were plenty in the offseason for other teams around the league. Jets have lost some key players, too.
They did.
Well,
Jeremy
Curley's out for this week, right?
Officially out with a concussion. That's all we know of right now officially. The Patriots haven't released their report yet, but I would suspect, the usual suspects we've been talking about this week aren't going to be there. Some news we should bring up, though, John.
Okay.
Since yesterday, since our last show.
Yeah.
Shane Vereen going on IR designated for return,
mm-hmm.
which means he's out.
For 8 weeks.
Make it more like nine because the eighth week is the bye week for them.
Actually, I'm thinking they might have thought about that and probably looked at it strategically to think, well, now he's got an extra week to get healthy.
Well, but... Yeah, but it's a longer time than I initially thought was.
Yeah, we only really thought 2-3 weeks.
Yeah,
maybe.
So we won't have him till the mid-November.
Mm-hmm.
Sad. Matthew Mulligan, tight end that was here last week for a cup of coffee, is back. They refilled his cup. He's back.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how long that lasts. But that doesn't really make me too optimistic about Gronk's chances for this week. Not that I was anyway, but that kind of tells me that Gronk's not going to be available.
I don't think Amendola will be either.
I don't think he will, based on everything I've heard and seen. So that's pretty significant.
Well,
since we last had our show.
As Michael mentioned, injuries seem to be significant for a lot of teams at this early stage of the season. Do you treat that any differently than we have any other year? Do you think it's because of the way the game has somehow migrated? What do you attribute some of this early season injury problem to?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. I do know that New England was lucky throughout the summer because a lot of teams were losing their guys early in camp and, you know, were devastated. Now they're starting to take the hits, and I'm not sure which is better.
Can I add a couple of theories here?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Number one, I think that a lot of guys, you can take this one of two ways. I tend to think that guys overtrain. And it used to be...
Too much wear and tear?
Yes. I used to be, of course, you know, back in the 1950s and 60s, the early days of the NFL, you know, the NFL was a part-time job for these athletes. It didn't become a full-time job for most players until well into the 70s. Well into the... Probably around the time when we went to the 16-game schedule, which was 78?
76, I
maybe.
Believe.
Okay,
yeah.
1976. I'm not looking at the computer, so I don't know. Someone will tell me, but it was there in the mid to late 70s is when we went to the 16-game regular season schedule. Before that, it was 14. I'd say that was about the time that players and teams finally decided, all right, more, you know, of a demand now, so now we got to be ready, you know, year-round. And so that's when we started evolving to the game becoming a year-round occupation for these players. Plus, the salaries were beginning to increase. The popularity was increasing. Television revenues, ticket revenues, souvenir revenues, concession revenue, all increasing. They've all been on the increase for the past almost 40 years now.
Rising tide lifted all boats.
Yes, exactly. And so I really think that, you know, guys then, once they got adjusted to becoming full-time athletes, as opposed to being guys who would come in and use the six preseason games, which is what it used to be, you know, in the 60s and early 70s, they use that time to get in shape. Just like spring training, you know, for baseball players and training camp for all, you know, training camp is sort of it's not really an accurate statement anymore for any major sport.
Yeah.
Because any major professional athlete is going to be training year-round now.
Right.
And so I think we have more emphasis on injuries a lot of times because, A, guys train too much.
That's good.
Bodies need some time to recoup.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, the game is bigger, stronger, faster than it has ever been.
That's definitely true.
In the history of pro football.
Definitely true.
And so when you add the two together, this is what you get. That's just my theory on why we see the injuries that we do, especially at early stages.
But how does that explain that it's happening earlier in the season than previous years?
I can only tell you that I think some guys that have trained hard during the off season to stay in shape, especially guys that are fighting for jobs, and you know, it'd be great to see if there was a sort of a comparison factor here as to vested veterans as opposed to guys who are not or rookies who actually has a tendency to get hurt earlier in the year. That's one piece of research I would actually love to see. But because I think it would be interesting and could change the way teams train and the way teams look at particular players, especially when you're having to sign guys. I don't know overall whether or not what was your question again? I'm digressing.
How does that explain the rash?
Oh, the rash
so
early
injuries.
I can only surmise that because guys train all year and then they start ramping it up early in the season and they've gone through the whole, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks of training camp, whatever it is, that, you know, they're just beginning to show regular wear and tear. And then, you know, when the speed of the game increases, and I think we really saw that from a lot of the younger Patriot players last week in Buffalo. I think we saw the speed of the game kind of knock Kimbrel Tompkins back a little bit. He caught up to it. And he's
from preseason to regular season.
Yes. Yes. The speed of the game increases from preseason to regular season. We talked a little about this in yesterday's show. And I think we saw that with Tompkins. I think we'll see that, we'll continue to see that with more rookies. And I think as some rookies try to adjust to that, they go full speed or they get smacked around at a full speed rate that they just not are ready for. And an injury ends up happening.
All right.
It's just a theory. Like I said, I'd love to see somebody do the research on this.
Certainly.
But to me, it's a logical bit of theory.
Yeah, I like it.
So this is why depth, above all, is key to a team's success for the long haul over 17 regular season weeks. And the teams, to me, that have the best depth are the teams that are there standing and competitive or kicking ass at the end of the year. That has been New England. New England's job will be tougher doing that this year with the number of rookies.
Yeah.
That they have.
At the end of the year, yeah.
And by the way, let me add here, because I want to make sure that we say this before the kickoff tomorrow night. The Jets are a younger team than the Patriots.
That's hard to believe.
They are. I think the average age is maybe a half a year per man, but, you know, it's still, they're younger. So are the Dolphins and so are the Bills. The Patriots are actually the oldest team in the division. Now, that doesn't mean much, except when you go up against the other teams within your division. Patriots overall still have morphed, and again, we talked about this yesterday in case you missed it. Patriots have still morphed from the second oldest team in the NFL to the 11th youngest in 2 years.
It's drastic.
It is drastic. So without as much depth, and without as much, quote-unquote, experience surrounding a guy like Tom Brady, what the hell in the wide world of sports is going on here?
They just played that clip from...
Did they?
From
Slim Pickens.
No, not that one. The Vince Lombardi version.
Oh, okay.
What the hell is going on out here?
Yeah, that was the Vince part. Mm. What the hell's going on out here? Yeah, I like that. That's always a good one from NFL
films.
What
the hell are you guys up to now?
Thank you, Eddie Mack. See, that's very true. All right, so... Anyway, in theory, that's what I'm thinking about injuries are concerned, but that's kind of what we're left with for tomorrow, at least at this stage of the game. Mike says, with the CBA, guys have to train on their own during the offseason. Is that a factor? I don't know that it is, because I know that they have to train on their own, but there's so many teams.
But they train together.
Yes, and there's so many.
A lot of
the facility is open year round for these guys, and with the OTAs, you know, that are required, and I just think that this is a full time profession, and yes, these guys are paid a lot of money to play this game and to be in shape to compete for a job. I simply think that I don't know that we've evolved as a species enough to be able to handle the wear and tear of the sport. I think we're getting there.
There has to be a point where,
there's a
saturation
breaking
point.
There's a breaking point. The human body can only take so much.
Yeah.
You can only ask it to do so much.
Yeah.
It's only built for so much. So, I don't know. Again, a theory. A theory. Mary Beth sends me this on Facebook. She says, the New York State Fair is huge. 10 days of wonderful. Here in Syracuse, big staples are fried macaroni and cheese and fried Oreos.
I have had fried mac and cheese. They have it at Toby Keith's here at Patriot Place.
Really?
They have them in little triangle
yes,
wedges.
Yes, I've
They're
had that.
Really
I've also
good.
Had fried dill pickles.
Really
you ever had
good.
Fried dill pickles?
No. Ooh. That sounds good, though.
Man alive.
Sounds good.
Those are the best. Most barbecue places now with a southern-based menu have that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a good little Irish place in Pawtucket now where the old Ground Round used to be called Murphy's Law.
Okay,
fried dill pickle strips there. They're out of this world.
Hmm.
Out of this world. You know where the best fried dill pickle chips are that I've had, actually? This is going to sound horrible. You know where the best ones are? Hooters.
Really? Okay.
Enough said.
All right. That's why you keep going back for more.
No.
Oh.
No, I
don't. Okay, well, you're being honest now.
No, actually, that was
for the service.
When I was, not really. But when I was coaching, 14, 15, and 16-year-olds, and we were on road trips,
and they all said,
"Where do you think they
want to
go? Yeah. They want to go to Hooters." Yeah. So we go to Hooters. That was actually the last time I went to Hooters.
Really,
was as a baseball coach.
Really, had to twist your arm.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. True stuff. My girlfriend Robin, she'll vouch for that. It's very true. So we digress even further now. This has digressed into just about nothing. Here we go. Kevin in Munich. Is that Germany, Kevin?
Yeah. It's actually Bavaria.
Bavaria.
Where the Oktoberfest is.
Hey, fantastic.
Speaking of fairs,
there can't be anything better than a fair in Munich.
Now, Kevin,
biggest fair in the world.
As a true Bavarian, do you wear Lederhosen?
No.
As a true Bavarian, do you have a beer in each hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I got two.
Just, yeah. Understood.
You're a fan of Bayern Munich?
What?
Are you a fan of Bayern Munich? The football team.
I don't like soccer at all.
Wow.
How about that,
this
all
is,
right.
This is good.
This is good. This is really good.
You know what? This call is going to lead me to my word of the day.
Oh, nice. Nice.
We'll tease.
Oh,
all
right.
Nice. All right, Kevin. So give us your prediction. What do you think about tomorrow night?
I'm thinking, the beginning going to be pretty close, but, Tom Brady going to pull off at least two touchdown passes.
Mm-hmm.
One to Boyce and one to Tompkins. And I think we're gonna get a pick six also, and the game's end 28-17 for the Patriots.
Nice.
Okay.
28-17 Patriots.
11-point win.
All right. So we'll mark that down, because if it ends up 28-17, you're the first one to pick the score, so you'd get the yearbook. How's that sound?
Oh, that would be nice.
See, there you go. So now, are you transplanted into Germany, or are you native? How are you calling? How are you coming up from Munich?
I'm a native.
Okay.
But I'm playing football myself, so that's the way I became a Patriots fan.
So do you know Sebastian Vollmer?
Not personally.
Do you play in that league that he was in?
Or? The northern part of Germany.
Oh, okay.
And I'm from the south.
Okay.
So.
Is it the same league? Do you play in the same league that he played in?
No, I'm one league below him.
Okay.
I play in the second division, and he played in the first.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they had divisions of football in American football in Germany. I thought it was just one level field.
We got six divisions.
Six? Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I don't think I realized that it was that in depth.
That's
in
pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. What would you equate, the top division? What would you equate that to as far as an American equal?
Maybe the second division in college.
Division two? Okay. Well, you know what? Division two football is pretty, a pretty good brand of football. So I think that, I think that actually would be pretty good if the sport has progressed that far. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty popular here in Germany, but we're still having not that many teams. So the first division team's got to drive on one weekend through whole Germany. So I think, the second division is probably that. With the same skill level from
okay.
the players.
All right. What position do you play?
Oh, I played nearly everything except line. But most parts I played defense back and safety.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. All right. 28-17 it is. Kevin, thanks for taking the time to give us a buzz.
Thanks for your job.
Absolutely.
Doing an awesome job there.
Well, we appreciate that. Don't be a stranger. Call again.
Danke. Auf Wiedersehen.
I'll do. Have a nice weekend.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you.
You got it. He's kind of like, what?
That's great.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So that's, we've hit Australia and Germany. And where else did we got an email from someplace else thought was a first.
Sven's from Sweden?
Oh, I've talked to Sven before. So
yeah.
Sweden
oh, okay.
is actually.
It's old hat for you?
It's old hat for me. We got another one from someplace bizarre yesterday, and I can't remember where it was now. That I actually mentioned it to Kevin, and I thought, this is probably a first. Where was that email from, Kevin? He's not listening.
Yeah, he is.
Is he listening?
Yeah.
Where was that email from yesterday?
Which one?
We got an email from a foreign email from yesterday that we said that might be a program first. I have to go back and look now.
I forget.
I know. I was trying to think. Well, we're trying to touch all continents here. All right. There you go. So we've got a couple of other. There's plenty of time left for you. Don't forget, again, Russell Baxter in hour number two, along with Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News, joining us here to talk more specifically about the Jets.
One other.
I know I've got other things here. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Go ahead.
I just wanted to, just one little news item, quote unquote news item. There's a report from Pro Football Talk, so take that for what it's worth, that the Patriots are one of a number of teams who've expressed interest in
Brandon Lloyd, right?
Brandon Lloyd, yeah. And allegedly Lloyd has turned down all offers, saying that he's not in physical or mental condition to come back to the NFL.
Yeah, the story basically has it that the Patriots, the Jets, somewhat ironically, and the 49ers are among at least six teams that approached Lloyd about playing this year.
Yeah,
and he has said that right now,
yeah,
he has no interest in playing at all.
And two of those three that you mentioned were former teams of his.
That's correct. So, for those that would say, well, why don't they go out and they get Brandon Lloyd again? He doesn't have any interest in coming back.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I'm a little surprised that, you know, the interest would have been on the Patriots side of this.
I am, too. But I think the right result was reached.
Probably so. So
time to move on.
Yeah, probably time for everybody to move on. So at least that's a bit of news that's kind of come about as well today. 855-PATS-500, 508-298-0398, web radio at patriots.com, the email at JRBroadcaster on Twitter. And David sends this on Twitter. He says, wanted to give you my prediction for this week's game, Pats 21, Jets 17.
So Jets
David's
cover.
Got it a little bit closer. Right?
Jets with the cover. All right.
I know I had some other scores here, so I'm going to have to take some time to look at it. In the meantime, here's on Facebook, Nori says, my prediction, Pats 28-17 over the Jets Clowns.
That's two in a row.
Two in a row for 28-17.
You're going to have to give two media guides away if that's the
score. If it comes out 28-17, and that's the two that we have, we'll give away two.
Yeah.
If we have, you know, 6, 7, 10 on the right score, then I reserve the right to give it to the first couple. I mean, it's just the way it is. You know, you need to be a little creative with this, and you got to be first with it. And if you can be first with it, then you fire it off and you do it. That's how you do it. That's how we play the game. Let's see. What else do we have? David, a different David on Twitter says, I think the Pats will win tomorrow 28-17. There's three already.
Wow, three.
Already three on 28-17.
You know what? It's going to be 28-17. I can tell the one time people get it right and everybody's picking
the same score. Run game, Nori says, will be efficient. The D will hold their own against a Jets offense that isn't all that great. Paul says, Pats 24, Jets 14. Patriots find a way to overcome the injuries, get it done, and don't commit any stupid penalties that give the Jets a late chance to win the game. Tompkins puts his rookie jitters behind him, makes a telling contribution in the passing game. He'll need to. I think he will need to tomorrow night. I think we'll need to see a little something from Aaron Dobson, too, provided he's eligible and healthy and ready to go and on the active roster.
Yeah, he needs to be. I couldn't believe he didn't play last week. He needs to step up. Especially with the likelihood of Amendola not being there. I mean, the second round pick, it's I don't want this to turn into Taylor Price all over again.
Okay.
You remember how poorly that worked out for
him? Yes. Well, that's also very true. Tim says, Jets week, compressed schedule, team with its most dynamic players on the trainer's table, and we turn into the Food Network.
There's only so much talk you can do about this game.
Tim understands that we digress, and
part
of the fun of it. But we always get back to the original point. You're just going to have to hang in there with it, because frankly, I like shows that do it that way.
Yeah,
because you can't talk about injuries.
Football
and
isn't the only thing going on in the world.
That's very true,
especially on a day like this.
We have to broaden our horizons, Tim. I expect better out of you. I can see Ridley having a solid bounce-back game based more on wishful thinking and hope than anything else. The Jets' D isn't too bad. Rex always puts a solid game plan together against Tom. I don't think we'll see too much pass rush from the good guys playing to contain Geno in the pocket after he scampered for 47 on Sunday. He says low score, 18-10, Pats.
Eesh.
Well, Tim, my brother from another mother, this is where we kind of agree, because I'm leaning that way as well. So I guess it's time for me to fire off mine here.
Okay.
All right, I told you earlier that there's no way the Patriots are covering the 12. What was it, 12 and a half? 12 and a half? Yeah. Not happening. I don't think, however, the Jets will win the game. Now, I'm not being a homer here. Here's exactly why. Number one, the Jets were fortunate. It was it took a huge gaffe that they did not create for them to win that game against Tampa. They got out Jets'd. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was almost butt fumble type thing that happened, for Tampa to allow the Jets to kick that winning field goal. So, and I think the Jets need to consider themselves fortunate to be 1-0 going in. But they are 1-0. That having been said, two things of note. The Jets running game, I don't think, is up to snuff right now. Number two, Geno Smith, while he is mobile, he did run for 47. Looking at some of the breakdowns that I have over the week of how he threw and how effective he was with pressure on him, it turns out that 80% of his completions last week were when Tampa Bay rushed four or fewer. When five or more rushed, his completion percentage was down in the 20s. So, therefore, I think the Patriots do need to put pressure on Geno, and I think mm-hmm. they need to make life uncomfortable for him. And I think this is where the scheme we saw last week, you know where I'm going with this? Where you put a guy like Chandler Jones in at tackle, and you try to collapse that pocket going up the middle, I think that's what could provide a lot of trouble for Geno Smith, mm-hmm. because even though they didn't quote-unquote sack E.J. Manuel, they didn't allow Manuel to get really comfortable. He only threw for 150 yards.
Right.
And I think that may be the way that the Patriots put pressure on Geno Smith. Thoughts?
I like the idea. I think that wrinkle that they added last week is something I want to see more of.
Yeah.
I liked the rotation. I liked that they were getting into E.J. Manuel's face a little bit. Not necessarily getting him down to the ground, but at least forcing him into doing things sooner than he might have wanted to, not being able to go through all of his progressions. I think you can exploit Smith more than you did Manuel, because I don't really think much of Smith as a quarterback. I think Manuel's a better player. So... And that wrinkle, the more you can get a, you know this, John, the NFL is getting more into like a basketball fast break type offense. The Eagles are the perfect example of that. Defenses have to adjust. You can't just have these big, fat, lumbering linemen front seven guys around anymore. You need faster, athletic guys. The more we can see those three defensive end type looks, maybe even put four. You know, throw Jake Beckett out there too. Who knows? I mean, just. If it's an obvious passing down, send everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I want to see more of it. I want them to get to the quarterback more. They have to do something.
Well, I think that get to the quarterback more, it also is going to help the pass defense without a doubt. This having been said, I think that's probably how they will defend. I think it's certainly a good enough way to look at defending a guy like Geno Smith. You know that, again, here's a guy that's going to get his first look at a Bill Belichick-coached defense. Even though he's not technically making his first start, he's still a rookie quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
And Belichick-coached
teams...
Might
as well be his first start. It's only four days removed from his first start.
That's very true. And Belichick-coached teams are 14-4 against rookie quarterbacks as head coach of the Patriots. So there is certainly a success there, which is why I'm not picking the Jets to win. But until I see it, I'm not sure, especially with Danny Amendola probably out, Rob Gronkowski probably out.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know yet what we're going to get out of Aaron Dobson. We haven't seen yet what we can get out of Kimbrel Tompkins. Not sure if we have anybody tight end-wise that can catch the ball. Without Shane Vereen, your best running back who can catch the ball as well, you don't know what you're going to have in the receiving core. So I think the Patriots will struggle to score again. 19-13, Patriots.
Wow.
19-13.
Odd score.
I'm going to say four field goals and a touchdown. I think they're going to have to rely on Steven Gostkowski to knock it through.
All right.
But 19-13, although I'm not sure it's a game that the Jets are ever in. They might score late to make it a one-possession game, but you know, and we might see an onside kick later in the game. But you know, I think it'll be like a 19-6 game for a lot of the time. You know, where that spread is probably right about there, and maybe the Jets score late, onside kick, game over. That's what I'm looking at. Just to provide a little suspense. Tony sends this in via email, Pats 31-10. That's what he says. Tony
closer
says
to
that.
What I have, yeah.
Sven from Sweden. He says, Playbook, I think the guy yesterday was from Estonia. It was an email from Estonia. Was it Estonia? Well, you'd think I'd remember that. I think you're right, though, Sven. All right. Good job out of you, Sven. Sven from Sweden. Like that. Steven sends this in. He says, basically, fried beer is fried dough with a yummy beer center.
Wow.
He says, just in case you want, to experiment, a recipe is below. Nice. Fried beer recipe. Two bottles of beer, few cups of flour, a few dashes of baking powder. See, now, this is my kind of recipe. There's no exact measurements. A little of this, a little of that. It's like making oops chili. You ever make oops chili?
Mm-mm.
You make
you
a,
just throw
basically
whatever you, have.
You basically make a regular chili, you know, you know, staple, right? And then you just kind of look what's in the cabinet, and you stand over the pot, and you have you hold the ingredient, whatever it is, and you just kind of go oops, and just pour it in there.
You
we used to do that. We used to do that all the time. That was our famous thing to do when I was in college: was make a big batch of oops chili.
Oh.
I had my roommate one time stand over with a can of snuff.
Oh, no.
And go, oops.
No, you didn't eat that. You did not eat that. Please tell me you didn't eat that.
It disappeared. You couldn't taste it. You could not
taste
it.
Oh, that's disgusting, John. I'm going to be sick.
Kevin's turning green on the other side of the glass.
I'm going to be sick, too. Oh, God.
Oh, we used to stand over. We used to stand over oops chili. It was not that bad, trust me.
Oh.
We used to stand over oops chili with bottles of booze, you know, like with a bottle of bourbon or a bottle of rum. Or we wouldn't mix the liquors. You know, that usually burns off anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. But we'd pour like whole bottles of something in there. I'm like, that's an extreme waste of good liquor.
Wow.
But we'd oops with jalapeno, and we'd oops with, you know, vegetables. We'd oops with, you know, tobacco.
Good
and,
stuff, like edible
yeah, really.
Items.
Edible items, right. And wow. sometimes smokable items.
Oh, that's so gross.
But
I'm really
oops chili, somebody said they make a batch of oops chili and they'd bring it around and it would be like a macho thing to be able to taste it because, you know, it wasn't because it was disgusting. It was because it was usually fire hot. You know, like the hot sauce
like the
that
hot
we
sauce.
Tasted a couple of years ago that Steve from Killeen sent us, you know? So. Anyway.
Wow.
All right. Like that. Salt, cinnamon, few cups of granulated sugar, wee bit of powdered sugar. Don't you like these? See, that's great. Wee bit, few dashes, few cups. Oh, yeah, two bottles of beer. That's it.
Jeez.
My kind of recipe. Pete in Augusta, Maine. All kinds of fairs in Maine, like the Freiburg Fair, probably the closest one to Mass. He says, Patriots 17, Jets 13. Hmm. This should be what should happen. Running game strong, Ridley and Blunt, run it down the Jets' throat. Defense plays well, pass rush shows up, corners don't give up the deep ball. This is probably what will happen. Edelman has a great game, Tom finds other receivers, laugh out loud, and he's right on with his accuracy. Okay.
Right.
So he's a 17-13. And your pick was again?
28-10.
28-10.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. All right, keep the cards and letters coming, kids. Webradio at patriots.com. 508-298-0398 on the phone, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free line, at JR Broadcaster, the Twitter handle. Boy, do we have ways to get a hold of us here on the program, huh? John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name on Facebook. Your predictions are still wanted. We'll get to as many of them as we can in hour number two. Big E, we'll see you here tomorrow night, right?
Can't let him go
I
yet.
Will be here tomorrow night, yep.
Yeah. Yep. What's that? Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of
it's
all ages,
yeah.
It's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
Inspired by our German phone caller, Kevin, earlier in the program when I asked him if he wore lederhosen like a true Bavarian, and he said no. And I asked him if he rooted for the football team, Bayern Munich, and he said, no, I don't even like football.
He likes American football.
He likes American football. He doesn't like the, you know, world football. That brings me to today's word, ersatz.
Ersatz.
Yes. E-R-S-A-T-Z.
Correct.
Ersatz.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it means, John?
I think I do, but you're going to probably correct me anyway.
Phony. False.
Phony. Right,
fabricated.
False.
Artificial.
Yes.
We have an ersatz. Bavarian calling our show today.
Right. An ersatz Bavarian. Oh, my goodness. Don't think those two words have ever gone back to back ever in the history of mankind.
Okay. Can't say that anymore.
No, probably not. All right. Tyler also says, put me down for 24-17 Pats. And I wanted to end with you on this particular note because we got a tweet here from our friend David, who we learned yesterday as a new Twitter follower that he was a U.S. Marine.
Mm-hmm.
He says, just a thought, but have you guys talked about the 12th anniversary of 9/11?
I was going to actually bring that up to you before I left. But I'm glad he did, too.
Yes, and I wanted to give him the nod here on this because
mm-hmm. Marine.
We are very proud of his service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
12 years, hard to believe, isn't it?
Shocking to think that it's been that long, even more shocking that it happened to begin with.
Where were you?
I was actually in my office at home. I had just gotten back from a West Coast road trip, a cross-country trip from San Francisco because Boston College at the time had played Stanford in football.
Wow.
And so, I mean, as this whole thing was basically, I guess, being plotted, I'm on a cross-country plane. But I was actually calling the radio studio that I was working for at the time and saying, all right, this is what we got to do. And then the lady said, lady I was talking to on the other phone, she goes, I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I said, okay, no big deal. I know it's Monday, whatever it was. And
Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday. It's early in the week. And she said, World War III has broken out. Go turn on your television. I said, okay. I turned it on, and I stayed there for almost the next 48 hours. Mm. That's where I was. I was at home. I was basically going about life. And then, the lady I was talking to on the other phone says, World War III has broken out. And so I immediately turned on the television, and I could not leave it thereafter. I'm still stunned at this point in time because, you know, like a lot of people who live here on the East Coast, I was at the top of those towers. I was
very
up there.
Close to home, yeah.
6 months before the towers came down, I stayed at that Marriott that was in between the two towers.
Really?
And I sat right there in the plaza looking straight up the glass at the two towers because it was actually situated right in between the Twin Towers downtown, which obviously was, covered in rubble a very short time later, thinking about where I had been. I didn't know anybody personally that perished, but I knew a lot of people who had friends and family perish. I have since been back to the memorial, and considered it, peaceful, very moving. And I was certainly a proponent of, putting the biggest and bestest skyscraper, tallest that you could possibly imagine back in that same spot, just to show that we are strong and we are resilient and we're not going to let, other people dictate our way of life, our chosen way of life, by the way. You know, it's up to other people to choose how they want to live. Okay. That's the first thing I'm saying. But for someone to infringe upon my rights that we have earned in this country, our military has fought for in this country for centuries now? No, I got a problem with that. And the fact that the new tower that's just about completed now, but it certainly is height-wise, that it's 1,776 feet tall, signifying the year of our independence, 1776, sorry, Brits. Fact of the matter is, that, to me, stands above and beyond everything that this country has stood for in the past, that we are strong and resilient, we won't be beaten. And I'm, while I have taken some time today to reflect in my own right, because I do have a friend, a gentleman whose son I coached in Little League, his sister died in the crash. She was actually on the first plane that hit the tower. I think it's great that we all take a little bit of time.
Absolutely. My thoughts, I think I summed up best when I wrote about them a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And I tweeted out a link to a story. If anyone is interested in seeing that, you can check my Twitter feed, and it's on my website.
EricScalavino.com.
Yeah, that will better express how I feel about
good.
Today.
Good.
And how I think others should try to honor those who we lost.
And we'll let your written word stand then. We'll give people a chance to go to sample EricScalavino.com.
Yep.
Nice.
Thank you, sir.
Good job, Big E.
All right.
We'll see you tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night
early,
at the game.
Right? Yeah,
Jets,
at the game.
Patriots.
Pats, Jets. Doesn't get much better than that around these parts.
That's right.
All right, we got to take a timeout here. We're going to continue with your predictions. Don't forget, email them, tweet them, Facebook them, or call them in. But you got many ways to get a hold of us here on the program. We got the timeout. Russell Baxter, the pro football guru himself, in the playbook.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance. You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a Triple Play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
With power comes responsibility, and NRG has taken that responsibility to new heights by evolving the way sustainable energy is discussed and used in the 21st century. With 3,000 state-of-the-art solar panels installed at Patriot Place, we've transformed the open-air retail complex next to Gillette Stadium into a visually stunning, self-sustaining destination that generates 60% of its own power. NRG is proud to be the official energy provider for Patriot Place, Gillette Stadium, and the New England Revolution.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Into hour number two on the playbook for a Wednesday, kind of in Thursday mode or Saturday mode because there's a game tomorrow here, which means that we get into it with Pro Football Guru, ProFootballGuru.com, Yahoo.com, Bleacher Report, etc., etc. Russell S. Baxter in the playbook. Russell, you were almost right last week. I got to give you full credit. You said that you thought the Bills had a shot and wouldn't be surprised if they beat the Patriots, and they came very close.
Yeah, it was an interesting week last week around the entire league, if you really think about it. What was it, 12 games were decided by 7 points or less?
Really?
I think was the most in any weekend.
Yes, correct. Yep.
And obviously we found on Monday night no lead was too safe. But the one thing about the Bills this year is I think they're an improved football team. They still have to learn how to win and close out games and so on. But I really like what you've seen out of E.J. Manuel so far, even though limited. Played a pretty solid game the other day. And I really like this Kiko Alonso, the linebacker from Oregon,
mm-hmm.
One of their second-round picks. They got Robert Woods as well. So I think youth will be a little served when it comes to the Bills this year, but it's going to be another thing of them learning how to close out games. They never really closed out the Patriots the other day. And by the way, 89 plays by the New England Patriots?
That's a lot of plays.
That's a lot of plays. We talked so much about the Eagles on Monday night, who wound up running 77, 53 in the first half, but 89 plays. The Bills only had 61. So, I mean, there's one big difference in the game already.
Sure. And I think, you know, the one thing that Patriot fans might be somewhat surprised with is that running that many plays, you still only put 23 points up on the board. And yes, the Patriots kind of shot themselves in the foot, with the turnovers, but they were able to ultimately overcome that. And they held on to the ball when they had to. Brady held the ball for 4.5 minutes out of the final 4:40 on the clock.
Yeah. And Amendola made some, amazing catches. I mean, Tom really threaded the needle a couple of times. And, there's an example of a team that knows how to win opposed to a team that's still learning how to win. And once again, the Bills are starting over again with a new head coach and a new quarterback, but definitely some promising young players. I just alluded to Alonso. Remember, he forced the fumble, in which, Denoris ran it back for a touchdown. And then he also recovered the fumble down near the goal line. When Brady, either the missed snap or however you want to term it. So a nose for football and those kind of tackles, again, Woods, Manuel, Doug Marone, you have to be a little excited about what you've seen. Now, of course, they play Carolina this week,
mm-hmm.
and off of last week's effort, if they turn around and lose to the Panthers, people will be, saying the same old Bills. But you had to like what you saw. But again, experience prevails. And Tom Brady does it as well as anyone has ever done it.
All right. Well, then you touched on Panthers, Bills. We do like to touch on, games obviously within the division. And one of the matchups this weekend has two undefeated teams, even though I know it's only one weekend of the year. But Miami winning a game that no one was really sure that they would win, even though they managed to beat a Cleveland team that might, again, not be as good as some think it is. And then Indianapolis also going 1-0 and perhaps being a little bit surprising in the way that they went about doing that. What was the bigger surprise in your estimation, Miami or Indianapolis getting off to the good start?
I was surprised that the Colts struggled a little as much as they did. I could see the Colts struggling with a lot of teams this year, to be honest with you, because I'm still not convinced their defense is definitely up to snuff. But I think the fact that the Raiders fell behind and refused to give in, and again, experience. Terrell Pryor makes two critical mistakes late in the game. He gets sacked for a 2-yard loss, John. He got sacked for a 16-yard loss, and then two plays after that, he throws the pick. You had to be impressed with Miami. That Cleveland Browns offensive line is very, very good, but obviously so is the Dolphins defensive line. They wound up picking off Brandon Whedon. Three times. I think as a team last year, the Dolphins only had 10 interceptions all season, mm-hmm. or somewhere in that regard. Mm-hmm. So that was a good start for them. And they got a road win. And, they're back on the road again. And it'll be interesting if the Dolphins can come off 2-0 with two road wins. That would be a really nice start for a lot of, and the thing that's interesting about Miami is I think people like their new personnel, but I think as many people, John, are as excited about Joe Philbin as the head coach as they are about the changes on the field.
Do they feel like Philbin is finally the guy? And why, in your estimation, is that the case?
Well, it could be a matter of communication. It could be a matter of communication with a young team. You know, it's really starting to stand out to me the decision to take Ryan Tannehill and not go with Matt Flynn. Obviously, Matt Flynn was somebody that Joe Philbin was familiar with being in Green Bay, but now we've now seen Matt Flynn, you know, not win the job in Seattle, not win the job in Oakland, and perhaps that tells you something about what he knows about the game of football. And I think it's in this day and age, and it's always been important, I think even more so now, you know, these younger players and listening to people who can really teach them about the game of football, and I think that's what Joe Philbin's doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. It seems like it's forever and a day away, but we also try to look at the upcoming opponents, and Tampa Bay, having played the New York Jets last week, that's the team that the Patriots will play next on the 22nd. They're at home in their home opener against the New Orleans Saints. Saints had a nice win to start out the season by beating a pretty good Atlanta team, an Atlanta team that had the best record in the NFL last year, but now the Bucs are at home. How good a team really is Tampa, and can we gauge how good they are at this stage of the season? Because we've seen them, but that was preseason. I'm not sure what we can count there.
And I'm not sure what to make of them either. I think they're a talented team, John. But that again, they don't make too big a deal out of one mistake. But that was a pretty egregious mistake made by the guy who led their team in tackles last year, Lavonte David.
No kidding.
It still perplexes me how that team was off to a 6-4 start and lost 5 in a row before beating Atlanta at the end of the year, and then they, you know, literally found a way to lose this game, as they did some other games last year. Blew a double-digit lead to the Giants, blew a double-digit lead to the Saints. A little perplexing. And, you know, for lack of a better word, I'm trying to figure out if this is a talented yet undisciplined Buccaneers team. You go back to that the Giants game last year when they came crashing across the line on the kneel down play.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Greg Schiano had to kind of explain himself afterwards. And then you see the Lavonte David play the other day, which was, again, not the smartest play in the world. I mean, if he even is near the sidelines, why go after the quarterback? So I can't figure out what they are yet. As for the Saints, I can kind of figure out they are because we know what they are offensively. And give credit where credit's due. They were down 10-0 in that game to Atlanta, and that's a whole different story with Atlanta. But down 10-0, and then Drew Brees did what he does best, and that's beat the Falcons. He's now beaten them 12 of the last 15 times he's faced them.
Falcons are going to have a tough go of it, I think, even though it's their home opener, because you know the St. Louis Rams are coming in. Rams won their opener, and I'm wondering how good St. Louis is, and if they are pretty good, what does that say about the NFC West? Is it the best division in football?
Well, you know, I kind of go off the last 4 or 5 years, and I've kind of given that to the AFC North because of, you know, sending at least two teams to the playoffs 5 years in a row, 3 teams to the Super Bowl in the last 5 years.
That's a good one.
But I think the West could, you know, is certainly in the running, especially if the Rams turn out to be pretty good, because I think we know how we feel about both Seattle and San Francisco. Of course, the AFC North made liars out of most of us last week by going 0-4 for week one.
Yeah, how about that?
So, and that's going to change this week because they're all playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the end, here's what you know about the NFC West: physical football. The Niners, the Seahawks, the Rams, and the Cardinals, all physical football teams. And I thought it was a good sign for the Rams last week that they won a 27-24 game. You know, that was last year. If the Cardinals scored, I think, at least 20 points, they won. So, you know, kudos to the Cardinals. Well, looking improved on offense. You think Larry Fitzgerald's the happiest guy in the world that Carson Palmer's around? You know, 2 touchdowns in one afternoon after he had 4 all of last season.
Yeah.
But the Rams are gotten good in the trenches. The tight end Jared Cook was huge the other day. They tied for the NFL lead with sacks, John, last year. They had a bunch the other day. Robert Quinn had 3 of them and 2 key forced fumbles as well. So, That they are a formidable team. And because they're so good in the trenches, and we kind of question what Atlanta is like in the trenches, this will be a very intriguing game for the Falcons.
All right, well, staying in that division, the game of the week might be the Sunday night game with the 49ers playing at Seattle. I have to admit, I've got to set an appointment and watch that on Sunday night because that ought to be extremely entertaining.
Yeah, I hope so. It's almost a shame they're playing so early
mm-hmm.
in the season. But much like Atlanta and New Orleans kicked off the season against each other, you know, we've obviously seen this rivalry just kind of, you know, spurred out of nowhere, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of it does have to do with the Jim Harbaugh, Pete Carroll connection that goes back to USC and Stanford. But, yeah. You know, these teams are very similar in a lot of different ways. They were 1-2 in the league last year in points allowed. Seattle first, San Francisco second. I want to say they were 3-4 in the league in running the football last year, among the top defenses. Of course, everybody remembers what Seattle did to San Francisco late in the season, the week after the Niners beat New England. Seattle laid a whooping on them in Seattle. And, of course, this game is in Seattle where the Seahawks just don't lose. They were the only team in the league last year not to lose a home game.
Sure.
So tall order for San Francisco, especially if their secondary isn't settled down, which it certainly didn't look like it last week. But talk about outfoxing somebody. All that time that I guess Dom Capers and the Packers spent on looking at the spread option, they just watched Colin Kaepernick spread the ball all over the field.
Sure did. Threw for over 400 yards. But, you know, Russell Wilson also had 3+2 as well last week. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that certainly bodes well. And Quan Bolden's performance, individual performances, week to week, they kind of come, they go. Some of them are more significant than others. But for a guy that was basically given up on the scrap heap, I mean, a sixth-round draft pick, really? And for him to have a 13-catch, 200-plus yard game, only the second receiver, to do that in the opening week of an NFL season? I thought that's extraordinary, number one. And number two, why did so many people miss on the fact that he's clearly got gas left in his tank?
Well, here's what's interesting, and I'm sure there's got to be a backstory to this, John. Remember, Anquan Boldin was going to be cut by the Baltimore Ravens for salary cap purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, lo and behold, he somehow winds up on the team who they played in the Super Bowl, and the coaches are brothers?
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know,
I don't know what the backstory is. I might have to wait for one or the other's book.
There's got to be something, right?
Yes, there has to be something, because he was going to be let go. I mean, that was everybody, I think, was just waiting for him to be let go.
He
kind of picked up where he left off in the playoffs last year. He burned the Niners for over 100 yards in the Super Bowl. And who he reminds me of? He's like Moses Malone.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys who's not going to be denied the ball. I mean, Moses Malone was a hard worker,
yeah.
Great rebounder, you know, obviously a Hall of Famer and so on in the NBA. That's Anquan Boldin. You know with him that you are going to get his maximum effort when you throw him the ball. He's like a power forward. And, certainly there were some open spots in the Green Bay secondary the other day. But I was writing about this the other day. If the next team to get Anquan Boldin, make sure you watch what he does in his first game with his new team. How's this, John? His debut in the NFL was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
With the Cardinals. 10 catches, 217 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Wow.
His first game with the Ravens was in 2010. 7 catches, 110 yards. And, of course, the other day he had 13 for 208 and a touchdown. So wherever Anquan Boldin winds up, even if it's with Los Angeles, when they finally get a team, take Anquan Boldin in his first game with his new team.
I got to admit, I find it remarkable that maybe one brother said to the other, hey, we're letting Boldin go, but, you know, why don't you give me a sixth-round pick and we'll ship him your way, and that other teams wouldn't be clued in on that.
Yeah, especially
the Patriots.
And so on, because he was getting ready to be released because for salary cap situation, and you saw a lot of that with the Ravens changeover and so on, but I don't know, and as it turned out, John, very fortunate for the Niners because they don't have Michael Crabtree right now.
No fooling, and I know that there are Patriots fans, and myself being one of them, that wondered, how can you make an evaluation and not at least consider bringing the guy in like that if all it took was a sixth-round draft pick to get him?
I agree.
I think that's it just goes to show
It was funny, if you remember when he was traded from Arizona to Baltimore. I believe he got the Cardinals got two picks for him.
Yes, they did. You're absolutely right about that.
Yep, involved in something else.
Yep, that's exactly right. And at the time, everybody said that was.
Still owns the rookie record for catches in the season with 101.
Probably,
I believe it is.
Is it Bolden?
It's Bolden, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it seems like every time he gets counted down and out or considered done, he's got a little bit left in the tank.
Well, hey, listen, if you need to question anything about Anquan Bolden, here's the most glaring example of anything I can ever think of when it comes to him. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. It was 2008 at the Meadowlands in which he got leveled by Eric Smith, the safety for the Jets. I believe he had to have plates put in his face.
Yes.
For that hit. And Eric Smith, I believe, was fined substantially. Do you remember what I'm talking
about? Yes.
Well, 2008, I believe, was also the year the Cardinals played the Super Bowl, and he wound up playing in that Super Bowl later in the year.
He sure did. There may not be a tougher son of a gun out there, perhaps with the exception of Wes Welker, but there's nobody tougher, and he still got the ability.
Listen, you know as well as anyone from the AFC title game last year, they put Aqib Talib on him, which was a great matchup of two physical players. And when Talib got hurt in that game, it changed everything.
Sure it did. It absolutely did.
Bolden exploited the Patriots secondary in the second half, and that largely was because Talib was out of the game.
There's no question about that. And I'm kind of harping on the whole Bolden thing here because that kind of leads me in to tomorrow night's game between the Pats and the Jets. Fact is that Danny Amendola is most likely not going to go. Rob Gronkowski is most likely not going to go. So who does Tom Brady have to throw to? Sure would be great to have a veteran presence like Anquan Bolden to rely upon, but wait, no, that doesn't work. It's Julian Edelman, and I don't mean to denigrate Julian Edelman, but if you are the top threat, you know, then you're gonna see your share of double teams. You're certainly gonna see some safety help. You're gonna see, you know, traffic, I think, be a little bit more congested over the middle of an opposing defense if you know that this guy is gonna be targeted. So this means the younger, more inexperienced guys have somehow gotta figure out a way to get on the same page as Brady tomorrow night. Otherwise, the Jets, I think, have an opportunity to steal it.
Yeah, and it's not like that the Jets don't have any veteran corners when Antonio Cromartie and Kyle Wilson and D. Milner's there, the rookie.
Just saying. That's exactly right.
But, I mean, you bring up an extra point. Where is the pass, the production from the passing game going to come from? Who's going to be the main target? Is he going to use Stephen Ridley more in the passing game? That would be interesting.
He's going to have to because you don't have Vereen. He's out for 8 weeks now.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, it's and of course, being a short week for obviously for both teams, but, you know, the Jets didn't sustain the injuries that the Patriots did, so it makes it all the more trickier. So
I think
you bring up a valid point.
I also think
very, very valid point.
I also think that former Jet Leon Washington, you know, if he's active tomorrow night, could figure into the game plan quite a bit.
Yes, he could. Well, he could, and they would probably need him to. I mean, it wouldn't hurt. Would certainly wouldn't get hurt to get a touchdown from something other than the offense.
Yep.
You know, this is going to be intriguing because the Jets won a game last week that a lot of people figured they wouldn't win. They certainly got a break, you know, due to a bad penalty at the end of the game. A player has to be smarter than that when a quarterback or any player is hugging the sidelines the way he did and so on. But, you know, it's funny. Sometimes you win a game like that a lot of people have you down and counted it out, and most people have the Jets counted out this season. But it gives you a little bit of confidence and say, you know, hey, why not us? Mm-hmm. We managed to win. I don't know how we won, but we won. We're 1-0. They're 1-0. Why can't we go in there? We've beaten New England in Foxborough before. Why can't we do it again?
Right. So what are your thoughts then on tomorrow night and how this thing actually might play out? I think that the Patriots, honestly, you know, so sometimes, you know, week two games are way difficult, more difficult. We talked about it earlier this week, way more difficult to predict than week one games. because you just don't know about the adjustments more so. But the Patriots don't seem to have all of their weapons in place, which leads me to believe that they might just kind of pull in the hatches a little bit, maybe try to rely on the running game. We saw the Jets actually be, fairly quick to the ball and did a good job of stuffing the run a bit, and stopping Doug Martin last week for Tampa. So, you know, that might play into the Jets' strengths. And I don't know that the Patriots have the strength to match up to, exploit what the Jets might have defensively.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't know if the Jets have the weapons to exploit New England's defense.
Right.
And, I mean, I think this shapes up as a very low-scoring game. I don't
yep.
think there, to me, there, I don't think there's any question about it. And, you know, you had to like what you saw out of the New England running game last week, which, of course, they were seventh in the league last year when it came running the football. And, of course, Ridley was seventh in the NFL in rushing. But, I mean, they were, the 89 plays showed, a lot, even though Brady threw the ball a lot, it was still a very balanced attack, and impressive at that. And, you know, I don't know if the Jets, they have a very young defense and a young front seven. And that's a, you know, that's a fairly well-schooled New England offensive line. I'm not going to be surprised if we don't see a lot of passing from Brady tomorrow night. Again, I don't know if the Jets necessarily have the weapons to make hay against a lot of defenses this year. They won the game 18-17, and fortunately for them, they wound up getting a safety in that game on the botched snap that rolled through the end zone with Josh Freeman.
Sure.
So they took every break they could get. I think it's a tall order for the Jets to go in there, given New England's history with them. And last year, you know, I know they had the overtime game up in Foxborough, but I mean, whacked them pretty good, obviously, on Thanksgiving last year. And this might be just a year where the Patriots are, you know, winning their share of nail biters. I'll go back to when they won the Super Bowls. They were always good at winning those nail biters. They always found a way. And I don't care if you win the Super Bowl by 30 or 1, you still get the ring. So
true.
To me, I've been waiting to see if the Patriots get back to the running game and efficient passing and good defense, which was always their calling card when they were a championship team. I think maybe even out of necessity, that's the way they need to go, and I think they'll get it done.
All right. Russell, before I let you go, from week one, what was the biggest surprise in your estimation?
Week one's biggest surprise.
Yeah. What did you really just not expect? Kind of came out from, sorry, I'm going to use a baseball paraphrase here, vernacular here. What came out of left field?
Well, we weren't sure what we were going to see Monday night with the Philadelphia offense.
Yep.
And 53 plays and 322 yards later in the first half.
Yeah, that
alone,
that was extraordinary.
That was something to see.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing that I'll be curious about, and this is going to be a two-week thing, we'll see. The Philadelphia Eagles play the San Diego Chargers this week,
mm-hmm.
both of them coming off a short week. Now, ordinarily, that wouldn't mean anything. But as now as I'm referring to Chip Kelly as Paul Westfall and Loyola Marymount, I'll be curious to see what a short week does to the pace of a team that wants to play that much up-tempo. And to make matters even more interesting, John, the Eagles play 4 days later on a Thursday night against Kansas City.
Wow.
And I'll really be curious to see conditioning in September with that kind of offense after 4 days rest.
Yeah.
So the Eagles, to me, are intriguing. The one thing, let's also keep in mind, they were up 33-7 and wound up winning 33-27 and holding on. Because the one thing about their offense, they do run a lot of plays and they make a lot of big plays. They don't exactly do a great job of killing the clock.
No, they don't. You know, they kind of leave.
Every time I looked, it was 33-7. And there was still 12 minutes left in the third quarter. And then it would be 33, you know, whatever it was, 20. And
yeah.
There'd be like the whole quarter to go. So, that's something that to keep in mind. And we don't know how much Chip Kelly pulled back in the second half. Obviously did. They only ran 24 plays in the second half. And we don't know how much more he's got to unveil. But I guess I would say I was surprised just how efficient it was.
Mm-hmm.
For something that had such an unknown attached to it.
Right, right. Don't you kind of feel like, though, that once this begins to unveil itself over the course of the next few weeks, that usually, as in the NFL, some of these defenses will begin to get a clue and start catching up to it?
I don't think it's quite as bad, especially the divisional teams.
Yeah.
I'm sure Washington is licking its chops to play them again. Because they'll, you know, they will have experienced. I mean, Washington looked stunned.
Yeah, they did.
In the first half. And then you combine the turnovers that Washington had, which, by the way, they had the fewest turnovers in the league last year, and they wound up turning over, well, what, three times the other night? Robert Griffin had, you know, their two rookie stars last year, Griffin and Alfred Morris, you know, had problems hanging on to the football early in the game, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a 7-0 lead turns into a 33-7 deficit.
Right, right. I had a question earlier today that I figured you could probably answer as well as anybody, but fact of the matter is that, you know, early in the season there have been a significant number of injuries. Patriots are certainly one of those teams. Do you attribute this to anything in particular, or is this just business as usual in the NFL these days?
I think there's been a higher number. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I'm wondering if the lack of contact doesn't have something to do with it. It's almost like you practice with trepidation now. And I understand the safety angle and all that, but I think you have to let football players be football players. And it is a dangerous game. I'm not saying you go headhunting in the preseason and in training camp, but we're not seeing head injuries. We're seeing ACL injuries. Okay, that's the thing that's most perplexing. What is that the product of? Okay, is that a product of not running enough? Is that a product of just fluke? Is it a product, you know? And we see our share of non-contact injuries as well. So it's hard to get a bead on it, exactly what it is. And sometimes you just have these, you know, runs. I mean, a couple of years ago was the, or last summer, wasn't last year, last summer was the summer of the torn Achilles. You know, we had a couple of these this year as well. Michael Crabtree, as a matter of fact. So I think I would like to see, once we get to the 18-game schedule, and it's inevitable that we do, I think the NFL needs to look very, very closely at their year-round program in terms of not only limiting them to two preseason games, but making this making practice far more conducive to what a game is. Instead of limiting contact, and you can't do this and you can't do that, forget about what they can't do. What can they do, and what can they do to make the game better? You know, last week was an odd week. We had all those touchdown passes, was a record.
Yeah.
In this week one. But notice how many teams got to 30 points. It wasn't as many as you think.
Right. That's right. It wasn't. And the Patriots were not one of those. But I think they feel like they kind of shot themselves in the foot where that's concerned. So certainly had one taken away at the goal line. What's that?
First time in seven games, John, that the Patriots did not score at least 31 points against the Bills.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. Russell, it's great to talk to you on a Wednesday. I'm sorry we won't talk tomorrow, but that's because we have a game to play tomorrow night. So shall we try it again the usual time the following week?
I was going to say, if you want to call me Friday, we can exchange recipes.
Well, we did have a recipe email today for fried beer.
Fried beer.
Yes, because we got into
I think the person who submitted that recipe was fried.
May have been, but we got into a whole thing about state fairs, and the Texas State Fair, as I know you know, is all things fried, and, you know, so we were wondering out loud about how you made fried beer. Somebody sent us a recipe.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've had fried pickles.
Yes, fried pickles.
I've yet to do the fried Twinkie. I heard those are outstanding.
They are good. They are good. There's no question. They're decadent. Yes. We'll continue this discussion.
Absolutely. I told you. Call me Friday. We'll
continue. Perfect. Perfect. Thanks, my friend.
You got to enjoy the game tomorrow night. I'm sure it'll be fun. It always is.
Absolutely. It's Pat's Jets. Doesn't get any better than that. Russell Baxter from ProFootballGuru.com, Yahoo Sports, Bleacher Report, joining us in the playbook as he does usually on Thursdays, but we move it up a day to Wednesday because of game week being played tomorrow. Let me get, do you want to take a break, Kev, or do we want to get a couple of emails in here? You want to take a break? All right, let's do that.
And then we'll have Manish coming out.
Yeah, and then Manish Mehta coming up again from the New York Daily News to get into some more from the Jets' perspective. So let's get in a quick break. We'll get some emails in as well. Webradio@patriots.com. If you have not yet submitted your score prediction for tomorrow night's game, you can also hit us up on the Twitter at JR Broadcaster or on the Facebook page, John.Rook. Ready, set, go.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance.
You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
With power comes responsibility, and NRG has taken that responsibility to new heights by evolving the way sustainable energy is discussed and used in the 21st century. With 3,000 state-of-the-art solar panels installed at Patriot Place, we've transformed the open-air retail complex next to Gillette Stadium into a visually stunning, self-sustaining destination that generates 60% of its own power. NRG is proud to be the official energy provider for Patriot Place, Gillette Stadium, and the New England Revolution.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Back inside the playbook as we hit the home stretch here before kickoff tomorrow night. Patriots and the Jets here at Gillette Stadium, 8:30 or thereabouts. Covering the Jets, and he's done it pretty well for a while now, Manish Mehta for the New York Daily News joins us here in the playbook. Manish, John Rook here in Foxborough. Glad to have a chance to talk with you. Thanks for the time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on, John.
I have to admit, this doesn't seem to have the same kind of buzz heading into it, and maybe it's because we don't really know yet what to expect from both teams, as both teams seem to be undergoing a bit of a transition with certainly an infusion of youth. Can you give us at least your impression of how close the Jets are to being what the Jets have been over the last couple of years?
Well, they're a ways away from that, John. Obviously, they've got a rookie quarterback making his second career start, first on the road. So it's going to be a tall task for Geno Smith. It was going to be a tall task anywhere, but to do it against a division rival in prime time, second game of his career, it's going to be difficult. But I think that the new general manager, John Nitzick, realizes this. It's going to be a 2 or 3 year process. The big side story, of course, is that Rex Ryan likely does not have 2 or 3 years to rebuild this team. He's got to win now so that the owner, Woody Johnson, can retain him, because he, even though he is signed through 2014, you're probably not going to bring him back if the general manager doesn't want him back. And it's kind of an interesting subplot there, because there's competing interests between the head coach and the general manager, who had to inherit that head coach, which is obviously an unusual situation.
Right. I think track records always speak to, hey, the GM is the one that does the hiring and firing, and when he comes in with a guy already in place, if it doesn't go well, well, the GM isn't going to step aside. It's the coach that steps aside. Let's also, though, along these same lines, you mentioned Geno Smith, and clearly there are some people around here, these parts, that have saw him play collegially, because West Virginia, for a time at least, was in the Big East and saw him play. I saw him play extensively in college. Does his arrival now signal the end of Mark Sanchez in New York?
I think so, and I think that when they said that there was a quote-unquote fair and open competition in the preseason and training camp, they didn't need to say that, because that wasn't true. What was true was that the organization wanted Geno Smith to win the job. They weren't ready to just hand it over to him. They did want him to earn it. Now, if you, by every objective measure, looked at how both of these guys played in the preseason, anybody would have said that Mark Sanchez won it, obviously, before he hurt his shoulder in that third preseason game, and that's another story altogether as to why he was even in that game. But the bottom line is that the team wanted to have a starter in place before their third preseason game, which makes a lot of sense, because you want to have your starters in that final dress rehearsal play two and a half quarters, typically, to get ready for the regular season opener. But what threw them for a loop was when Geno Smith hurt his ankle in that first preseason game. Mm-hmm. He was slated to start the second preseason game, but because they decided to practice him in the run-up to that second preseason game, which also made absolutely no sense, he wasn't healthy enough, so they had to alter their plan. They had to alter the rules of this competition. Geno Smith made his first career start in that third preseason game, threw three first-half interceptions, really didn't look ready at all, and then for some inexplicable reason, Rex Ryan threw Mark Sanchez into the game mm-hmm. in the fourth quarter behind second and third stringers. Obviously, Sanchez got hurt. It doesn't look like Sanchez is going to be back anytime soon. He actually visited Dr. James Andrews today for a second opinion. I wouldn't anticipate he'd be ready anytime soon. But even if he were healthy at this point, unless Geno Smith implodes, I don't think he's going to lose this job at all this season.
Did he do that on purpose, Manish? Did Rex throw him in there on purpose?
Yeah, look, from everything I've been told is that he wanted to win the game. Why he wanted to win the game, that escapes me. That still doesn't make any sense on any level. And I know he's trying to placate the new general manager, John Idzik, and there's this competition mantra that they've been throwing out here for the better part of 6 months, acting as if competition doesn't exist on teams throughout the league. So I didn't really understand that to begin with. But just having Mark Sanchez, who at that point in the game now, keep in mind, Geno Smith had the three first-half interceptions. He also ran out of the end zone, some bad field awareness, which led to a safety early in the third quarter. So he had four turnovers at that point, and everybody in the building, everybody watching on TV, pretty much knew at that point that Mark Sanchez had won this competition. He should have been the week one starter. But Rex put him in there, and again, it made no sense, and I think that Rex Ryan realized it after the fact. I'm sure he's kicking himself, because not only did it alter the quarterback competition, it probably ended Mark Sanchez's career as a New York Jet in terms of being a starting quarterback. I would assume at the end of the season they would part ways with Sanchez, and that's really a sad way to end a career that started off so well, as you guys know, in 2009 and 2010. But yeah, that's a puzzling decision, one of the worst decisions I've ever seen a head coach make in a preseason game, that's for sure.
Manish Mehta covers the Jets for the New York Daily News, joining us here in the playbook. You've been kind of critical of the Jets, and I guess that's part of your job to do that. What makes this team what it is right now? Is there one move, two moves, something that you can put your finger on, or is this just a general malaise that has sort of overtaken this team over the last year or so, maybe even, and I hate to bring it up, but I am going to bring it up, maybe even since the butt fumble game?
Well, I think you need to retrace the problems that this current team has to the day after the regular season ended in 2012, when Woody Johnson decided to fire Mike Tannenbaum but retain Rex Ryan. I always thought that the smart thing, the thing that made the most sense, would be to either retain both of those guys for one more year or to get rid of both of those guys. Because, again, you put the new general manager in a precarious position by inheriting this new head coach. Now, that being said, John Idzik has made some mistakes, in my estimation, some missteps. The Jets obviously didn't have a lot of cap room, so they weren't going to go out and make a big splash and sign a guy for $15, $20 million. I mean, that goes without saying, but within the constraints of the salary cap, the moves that John Itzik made in the offseason were not very good. They needed to bring in a veteran quarterback before they drafted Geno Smith, before they knew Geno Smith was going to be available in the second round. Mm-hmm. They need to bring in a veteran quarterback to compete with Mark Sanchez. What did John Itzik do? He brought in David Garrard, 35-year-old quarterback with knee injuries, history of knee issues, who hadn't played in a regular season game in two years. He obviously wasn't going to be the answer, and that became pretty evident when 2 months after they signed him, he retired, and then they drafted Geno Smith, didn't get in a veteran quarterback. Their first big free agent signing, relatively speaking, was Mike Goodson, signed him to a 3-year, $6.9 million deal. He missed all of training camp and the preseason due to personal issues, and that was after he got into some legal issues after the Jets signed him. So that was a mistake. They traded for Chris Ivory. Chris Ivory, I think, can make a valuable contribution at some point this season, but he missed part of camp with a hamstring injury. They brought in Steven Peterman as a veteran interior lineman. They cut him before the season started. So the early returns for John Idzik aren't very good. And normally, you know, you would give a guy a pass if he's got a track record. But keep in mind, this is his first GM job. He is not a personnel man, no matter what anybody tells you. He was a salary cap guy, a guy who concentrated on contracts with Seattle, with Arizona, with Tampa Bay. He dabbled in personnel from time to time, but that's not his forte. And again, the early returns for the guys that he brought in via the draft are to be determined. I think he might have a guy who's going to be pretty solid in Sheldon Richardson, but I think there were mistakes there. Of course, the biggest mistake, I'm going to say this until this guy retires, was trading Darrell Revis. I don't think that was all John Idzik. A big part of that was Woody Johnson not wanting to pay Darrell Revis the kind of money that he wanted. But I've always contended, I know he was coming off an ACL injury, but you don't trade one of the best defensive players in the game in his prime. You just don't do that.
Yeah, I can't say that I disagree with that assessment as well. How has all of this now upheaval and the strained situation of bringing in the GM and keeping the coach, how has this changed Rex Ryan? Because he doesn't seem to be the same coach that he was even early last year.
Yeah, look, it's evident. All you got to do is watch one of his press conferences to know that he is not the same guy publicly as he was back in 2009 and 2010. Look, he was the anti-Bill Belichick. You guys know that. He said some wild things, some crazy things, things that he probably wished he would have back, but that was the refreshing part of Rex Ryan. That's what made Jets fans gravitate toward him. And he obviously made predictions that he couldn't back up, but I think that was refreshing, and it looked different. And he actually mocked coaches like Bill Belichick, not for the success, obviously, but just for that outward demeanor, that boring facade, that boring exterior. And it's ironic now that, you know, 5 years into his reign as the head coach, he's really become that. He's become a sanitized, watered-down version of what he was, and you know that he is not really like that. That's not the Rex Ryan personality that everybody got to know. And my understanding is that he's really the same guy to the team, to the people in the organization. It's just the outward persona that he's projecting now is so different. And again, that comes back to placating John Itzik, who is as aloof as you can be. If you know anything about John Itzik, he is not really a charismatic figure. He likes to remain in the background. Everything that I've been told from people who have worked with him through the years is that he's extremely stubborn, unusually stubborn. And again, he's not going to have final say on Rex Ryan's future, but he is going to make a recommendation to Woody Johnson, and that recommendation is going to carry a fair amount of weight. So Rex Ryan is cozying up to the new general manager.
You know, all of this actually, it makes a tremendous amount of sense in terms of him changing who he is, but obviously in your publication, the New York Daily News, there's a story out, and we've seen it in some other places as well, about LaDainian Tomlinson saying on NFL Network that a couple of years ago, I guess it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in a meeting with the team, Tomlinson, when he was on the team, said that before the Patriots played the Jets, Rex Ryan told the team he wanted to punch Bill in the mouth. And I think that was probably just a way to fire up the team, but it seems like the team is fed off of that. And I can't help but think that even though he may be still somewhat fiery with the team, that his public persona is still having effect on this team right now.
No, that's a great point. And, of course, he was joking a couple years ago when he used that as a pregame motivational ploy. But that's what made players really want to play for Rex Ryan and really want to make sure that he's going to be around for a long time. And And when you look at Mark Sanchez, just bring it back to Sanchez for a second, after Sanchez was injured on a play in which he rolled out, threw the ball, Marvin Austin nailed him, really no way to protect himself. The owner, Woody Johnson, came out and had one of the most irresponsible comments that I've heard an owner make, at least since I've been covering the NFL. He said that he felt bad that Sanchez got hurt, but players have to learn to protect themselves. And anybody who has seen that play in which Sanchez was injured would tell you there's no way that he could have protected himself on that play. So I thought that was a low-class move, and when I asked Rex Ryan about it afterwards, that was an opportunity for Rex to defend his player. And other guys on the team take notice of that. You could have defended Mark Sanchez in that instance without offending Woody Johnson. There was a tactful way to do it, but instead, Rex pretty much just came out and said, look, there's a 100% injury rate in this league. We regret that he got hurt, but we've moved on. And this is the quarterback that helped give Rex Ryan 4 road playoff wins, that took Rex Ryan to the highest moments of his head coaching tenure with the Jets, and he's really just jumped ship. Look, if you want to make a change at the quarterback position, if you think it's time to move on from Mark Sanchez, fine. If you want to tilt the quarterback competition in favor of the rookie, that's fine, because the Jets did the same thing for Mark Sanchez in 2009. But when a player gets hurt and an owner makes such an irresponsible and careless remark, this is your opportunity as a player's coach to come and defend your player. And Rex Ryan came up pretty small in that moment, and that was extremely disappointing, at least from my end.
Some pretty good theater going on in New York, and I would expect nothing less from Broadway. So I think that's outstanding stuff, especially from a New England perspective. As to the game tomorrow night, Geno Smith, rookie quarterback. We know that Patriot defenses under Bill Belichick have had a good amount of success against rookie quarterbacks. But defensively, this seems to be a team that certainly has some pluses, building itself with some speed, doing a good job against the run against Doug Martin last week for Tampa. How does New York win this game tomorrow?
Well, first and foremost, they've got to limit the turnovers on offense. So Geno Smith has to play mistake-free. I mean, maybe he can get away with a turnover, maybe one turnover, but he's got to manage the game. I think a lot of pressure will be on the new offensive coordinator, Marty Morningwig, to streamline a plan, to make things easy, simple reads for Geno Smith. And he's going to need some help from the run game. He didn't really get much help from Bilal Powell or Chris Ivory last week. So that is on the offensive side. On the defensive side of the ball, look, I think, you know, Tom Brady has found success against Rex Ryan's team. There's no doubting that. They've won 6 of 9, 4 in a row. But Rex Ryan gives Tom Brady a little bit more trouble than a lot of other guys in the league. So I think if the defensive line, which is the centerpiece of this team with Bo Wilkerson and a rookie Sheldon Richardson, who they actually drafted at that 13th spot that they got from Tampa Bay in the Darrell Revis trade, I think those two guys could be cornerstones. DeMario Davis is an inside linebacker who is taking over Bart Scott, but he's got some tremendous lateral speed, so that helps out in coverage. But, you know, I think they're going to have to bring pressure on Brady, and obviously it helps out that there's probably going to be no Amendola, no Gronkowski, no Vereen. Mm-hmm. That doesn't hurt matters. But, again, I think this game is going to fall on Geno Smith. Will the moment be too big for him? Because if you guys remember, when Mark Sanchez the first time went up to Foxborough, I think he threw 3 interceptions. He had a terrible game. And I think that ultimately the Jets' fate will be determined by how their rookie quarterback plays.
That's good stuff. Manish Mehta, New York Daily News, covering the Jets. Thanks for the time today, Manish. It was great to visit with you. I hope we can do it again some point.
Anytime, John. Take care.
You got it. All right. That's really good stuff to kind of get a feel of the Jets game heading into tomorrow night. I give the Jets more than just a puncher's chance, because sometimes in rivalries, and make no mistake about it, this is a rivalry. Pats fans know it. The players, young as they may be in both locker rooms, and both teams are considerably younger than they've been over the last couple of years, but they know of New York versus New England. They know. They get it. It's a divisional game, so there's a little added importance. Both teams are 1-0. That's the bottom line. It's important. It's important. There's no doubt about it, especially when you're in the division. Michael sends this on Facebook. He says 23-16, Pats. Let's see. I also had another 24-17, Pats, coming from Tyler on Twitter. And let's see, by email, our friend Melvin in Tennessee says 24-17, Patriots as well. Josh from Charlottesville, 24-17, Patriots. So there's 3 24-17s right in a row. Let's see, did we have any others? I think we hit them all. Nicholas in Victoria, British Columbia. He says, I got to read through this real quick. Ah, he doesn't give a prediction. Oh, yes, he does. Pats 23, Jerks 17. He says, well, all right around 23-17, 24-17, 28-17. My pick was 19-13. I mentioned that.
Is that the year you were born?
Oh, give yourself a rim shot. God. Wow. Thank you so much for that, Kev. You hurt my feelings, man. Come on.
I couldn't resist the opportunity. You set yourself up.
Okay.
You even had the casual pause after it.
Wow. Okay, that's true. I just kind of set myself up for that one. All right. So if anybody gets the correct score, then you get the yearbook media guide, and we'll settle up next Tuesday. I will tell you, however, because things tend to go missing around this studio when we write scores and names and things like that down, that it, you will know, there's no question you will know if you won the yearbook, because you'll celebrate, right? So what I want you to do, though, is follow up with a tweet or an email or something and resend your original email or original post or whatever it might be. And then if you're on Facebook, it doesn't really matter because you'll have a string unless you, you know, of messages unless you wipe them out. So don't wipe out the string because that'll be your backup, right? That's usually what I use is the string for backup anyway. So we'll settle up on Tuesday. So the game tomorrow night, 8:30 Eastern time or thereabouts, give or take a minute or two on NFL Network, which has got the broadcast. And then we'll be back same patch time, same patch channel next Tuesday. It'll be a little bit more time to consider how things went on Nitpick Tuesday next week. But sometimes that's good when you can add a little perspective into the overall equation. And then, of course, the following game, back at home here at Gillette, on Sunday the 22nd, Tampa Bay. And we'll begin working toward that next week here inside Patriots.
Gotta get our pirate impressions ready.
Jolly
Roger comes to Foxborough.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to do that. We may have to have a pirate contest or some. The best pirate impression is going to win something, right? We may have to do that. Or not.
No comment.
Kevin's shaking his head. He's like, oh, my God, that's just awful.
I'm just thinking of all the pirate sounds I got to get now.
Right. Okay. All right, so until next Tuesday night, enjoy the game tomorrow night. I'll be here. Hope you're listening along as well. Otherwise, back here in the playbook next Tuesday. Have a great weekend.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2